Oh, you're sure. Steve and I are going to try and orchestrate, and I didn't realize I could see the slides down here in front, so I brought a computer up with me. But I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and this is a great symposium. Chuck mentioned that I did graduate work here in Nebraska, and last night as we were driving up from Kimball, actually from Fort Collins, but I had reflections of a range cow symposium in Chadron in about 1985. How many of you were there? Remember that one? That was a cold and snowy one, and gratefully the sun came out this morning and we're in good shape. So without further delay, let's just get right into the topic. It has been a bit of a challenging topic. Normally when I give a presentation, I have the benefit of some research data and so on. This would be more of an issues kind of an approach. But it's been fun to put that together. I've had the opportunity, one of the opportunities that we have in academics is periodically we can take sabbatic leave as a way to hone our skills and maybe bring ourselves up to date in some certain things. So during this past year, I've been on sabbatic leave and kind of worked in this area a little bit of animal identification, verification, and so on. So let's go forward, Steve. It's been mentioned that the beef industry is going through some very great times and some challenges perhaps. Hopefully we won't get to a point where, like Tom Schell indicates, that people will feel like they need to give up an arm or leg of the firstborn for the meat. I want to talk with you about several factors that have been, come together for relating to verification or trace back some of the things related to animal identification, including, as you're well aware, we've had challenges throughout the industry, throughout the world rather, perhaps not gratefully, not as apparent here in the United States with disease surveillance, the origin question that was brought up, and I'll discuss a little bit, food safety, certainly the events of a couple of years ago in September have heightened our awareness about bioterrorism kinds of concerns. I want to spend a little time toward the end about some of the benefits of information and adding value, much like Sally mentioned, of our product and as we use information to make genetic improvement. We've been blessed, as I mentioned, to not have the challenges, although we've observed the devastation that have happened in other countries, foot and mouth, throughout the EC and British Isles, have made a major impact on their economics. The BSE concern and problem that happened in Canada, one cow cost $2.5 billion to that industry. Fortunately, we've been spared that. Guidelines and feed changes and so on that have taken place have probably been credited largely for that. But certainly a lot of risk and a lot of concern there. Next slide. I mentioned 911. The world is not as safe as it was perhaps. At least that's our perception in the United States. And so bioterrorism and the threat to the United States, for that matter, the world, food supply, has been at risk, and a lot of concern about that. Next slide. An issue that's been debated and will continue to be debated and is certainly on the minds of most everyone in the livestock industry, and I know certainly in the beef industry, is the country of origin. It's been a bit of a ping-pong ball passed from place to place, but a lot of awareness and a lot of concern and a lot of support in as was mentioned in the question of taking the benefits of our safe food supply and using that in a marketing way. Next slide. Let's just go through a bit of a roadmap about country of origin, as it's been called, COOL. It was put in place, or at least legislated, in 2001 in the Farm Bill. The rulemaking took place. Some voluntary regulations were established by the USDA. Went out to some listening sessions. Funding was off. Funding was back on. mandatory regs were recently released in late October. Funding is off, funding's on, and who knows, maybe we'll get the answer to that in the coming weeks. It's right now in a bill that Sally mentioned, an appropriations bill, I believe, will be voted on today by the House. Coach Osborne probably update us a little bit as he talks with us tomorrow. Much of that has been the focus, and perhaps, and I'm certainly not the expert on what's going on in Washington today, but it appears to me as I try and stay plugged in that that may be taking a bit of a back seat to a national animal identification program that we'll talk a little bit more about. I've mentioned some of this. It was approved in October. Those regulations, although yet to be clarified whether they will be implemented as they're currently discussed, but tried to define who will label, what will be labeled, determine the origin of that, or use it as a way, of course, to identify origin. What I want to say just a little bit about, because I think it affects you as ranchers, is the record keeping and the ideas that are in there at this point. Of course, the original bill indicated that beef, lamb, and pork must be labeled, to be sold in certain markets, needed to be derived exclusively from animals that were born, raised, and slaughtered in the United States to be labeled as a U.S. product. Next slide. It appears as that process has gone forward in the listening sessions and the debate continues that we will all share in the responsibility of that information. Suppliers will be required, if that legislation passes and is implemented, to provide the origin information to the buyers. The record keeping will document the origin of those animals. It'll provide the need to provide a chain of custody information where those animals have been born, raised, slaughtered. Auditable, verifiable record trail has been used in the language, and that those records then be passed, or the information be passed down the line, so that the suppliers will be responsible for possessing having legal access to records that substantiate the claims of origin, and that those records will need to be maintained for a 2-year period of time as the regulations are currently written. The retailers, of course, they're the ones that will be marketing the product. As the language in the bill currently stands, will not be required to verify the accuracy of that information. However, I don't think it's any surprise to us that they will require a standard of the industry, of their suppliers, that information be correct and verifiable. One of the big concerns, and of course one of the questions, is the cost of this, the cost of country of origin labeling. The benefits will certainly, as we move forward, will be identified as they, depending upon the legislation. It's been estimated that 138 to as much as $596 million may be is what is termed in this Economic Research Service study in the country of origin information that was released in October, indicated that may be a reduction of that much in the purchasing power of the consumers. And so the debate continues. I'm sure that will come up as we talk throughout the conference. But there's some, obviously, some things there that will affect you as ranchers and in your production. Next slide. So is it cool or isn't it? I suppose at this point, both with industry input and politicians, there is a cloud of uncertainty that reigns over country of origin. Time will tell. I think it's opened some debate and some question that has been positive, that has allowed us as an industry to maybe focus on things that we have been less concerned or less willing to talk about, and thank goodness for the ability to debate and clarify and move through these problems and issues. the Western United States, or at least, and I know that the debate goes on, the division occurs. As I said earlier, the funding has been on, funding has been off. Next slide would indicate that it's currently in the omnibus appropriations bill, proposed to be delayed for a two-year period of time, to implemented in 2006. As I mentioned, Coach Osborne will probably have a little update tomorrow on that. And this being election year, as I read the reports and the things that are published, it appears that that's going to be a political plank in the platforms of the legislatures and the politicians as we move into an election year. That has led then to perhaps a more focused approach and some momentum toward a United States Animal Identification Program, or USAIP, a process that was begun before these issues became as widely known and as widely spread as they currently are. But the factors that I've already mentioned have certainly given that momentum and seems to be moving forward quite readily. A cohesive group of industry, governmental and otherwise, with the idea of safeguarding our national herd, as well as some spin-off things we'll mention as we go through this. Build on an approach of rapport and consensus. The approach to putting this program together was designed not to be us versus them in any way, but rather to work together, to be built on the common ground that the animal industries in the United States have, and to build it in phases. And so the approach has been that species groups have been involved. I think something on the order of 100 different organizations have participated in assembling the animal ID program. Allied industry has been involved, as well as veterinary organizations and governmental organizations have all come together to propose, again, yet to determine what the end will be, propose a phase-in process that will first start with a premise identification, move to individual identification of animals, and then ultimately to a tracing system that would allow the bioterrorism protection, the disease surveillance, the control things that are on all of our minds and are certainly issues in our industry today. As that begins, the initial part of that will be a premise identification, starting in the summer of this year. The database is in process to be developed, and then from there we'll move into perhaps, if implemented and accepted, move to a tagging for use within across state commerce, and then ultimately by 2006, if that again that timeline stands, would be that within state commerce would also be affected by this animal identification plan. Premises will be identified, and again, not yet clear as to how that will occur, but those premises will be so that origin and place of, at least place of birth and movement will be identified on a premise-by-premise basis. The next step will be to issue the tags according to the premise, so the premise will be issued, or the owner of the premise will be given tags, and then the tags will be placed in the animals. It appears that the radio frequency identification or the electronic ID will be the mode of use, as well as a visual tag and linking electronic ID along with RFID. And the numbers will be the same to make it as simple and straightforward a process as possible. One of the benefits we've had, perhaps, as United States, is we have had the chance to observe other countries as they have implemented, and the strengths and the weaknesses, the Canadian system, the systems that are present in Australia, in England, and the European Union, the good things that have been learned, and perhaps the mistakes that have been made, have allowed this system in the U.S. to perhaps be a little more refined as we move to it. We know that we market cattle through a various amount of our various sources into various places, livestock markets, direct marketing. Other roles also play a role, and so it has to be adaptable. It has to be a system that will be usable in almost any accommodation and configuration. Slaughter plants, the design of it within the system, by the way, the plan is up on the web in the paper that's in the proceedings. There's a website that you could go to and pull down about a 100-page document that outlines the specifics of the plan. But it would be designed in a slaughter plant to be a hands-off kind of a system as it's conceived at this point, and be adapted both for inventory control as well as the other issues that we've talked about. As part of my sabbatic leave, I had the opportunity to work with a spin-off company from Colorado State University that's been involved in animal identification as they have used the term secure source verification. Optibrand is a company that originated with some intellectual property at Colorado State and then spun off through the Research Foundation and is had the opportunity on sabbatic to become better acquainted with that. They've taken the approach of using a biometric. A biometric would be defined as something that's measurable, that's robust, that would not change over time and would provide a broad base of application, and then have some distinctive characteristics that could make it an individual identifier. There are other biomarkers such as iris recognition that's being used in human applications in some ways, in airports and ATMs in at least an experimental way. Of course, DNA would be another similar would fit the qualifications of a biomarker. Nose prints that are used in a lot of youth programs for 4-H would be another example of a biomarker, although the difficulties in smudging and so on certainly wouldn't be applicable in a widespread basis. So Optibrand and the CSU intellectual property identified that for some time in humans it's been known that the back of the eye, the retina, the blood vessel pattern of the retina is distinct. A fingerprint, if you will, and substantiated that is different in every eye in every animal, even identical twins. This would be from a human population here that shows the differences, the similarity and yet distinction between two twin sisters. Taking that approach to livestock and ruminants, a pattern that's distinctive that originates out of the optic nerve and then branches much like a tree. Even though trees may look alike, their branches are a little bit differently placed or contorted a little differently, and that pattern has been used and is being used as an identifier for livestock. Similar in other species, sheep, red deer, pigs, the distinction allows some flexibility with that. Combining that with the ability to locate using GPS, global positioning satellite information, then this company has drawn those two things together to use the distinctive retinal vascular pattern along with GPS coordinates as a positive identification and as a way to locate where those animals were, at what time they were there, and perhaps has some potential in the systems as we see them unfold. To identify not just the identifier, but also then to identify the animal with the distinctive biomarker of the retina. Certainly a lot to develop and a lot that will evolve as we move through this industry and move toward answering the questions that have been outlined. Perhaps involving both a biomarker and some of the traditional systems will provide some secure systems that we as ranchers or those involved in the cattle and food supply industry can take advantage of. I'd like to move and talk a little bit more specifically about some of the things that apply and maybe are a little more well known and we have some history with related to management of your ranches and how information verification, traceability, if you will, may apply at the ranch level. We've known for a long time, and obviously this is a quote or a clip that has been used in a lot of different settings. If we don't know the answers, if we don't have the information, it's very difficult to measure or make changes with that. I know that overlying one of the concerns with much of this topic relates to I've called it the Big Brother phenomenon. I remember back in junior high, which was longer ago than I want to remember, and at night when I read this book in the late 60s as part of a junior high assignment, I wasn't sure 1984 would ever arrive, but it's whizzed by, and we're almost 20 years since then. An author who actually had background, George Orwell, in World War II and some of the atrocities that occurred, wrote this fictional book that proposed the concern of having too much government intervention in our lives. And certainly that's a real and a valid concern. And so I want to explore a little bit perhaps the differences and some of the factors, as the title of the talk indicates, Big Brother or Best Buddy. I suppose in many ways it's a perception and a perspective. Is the glass half empty or half full? Is there liability in these concerns, or does it allow us to have credibility for the good things that we do and the safe and the high quality industry that we've built in the United States? Do we point the blame, or do we want to take the credit? The two questions at the bottom here, I think, have meaning. If we're doing things the way that we as an industry have set the standards for, or we'll continue to refine what those standards are, then perhaps there's no problem. On the other hand, if we are guilty, if we are doing things, then I guess I'd be bold enough to say that we need to be held accountable. Certainly our consuming public has held the merchandising world accountable, and the safe food supply certainly has a direct accountability. Now, I would interject here that I think many of us would say that we're willing to be held accountable for things that we have control of, but only for those things. And as we know, as we move through the food industry, from when the animal leaves our control to when it's consumed by the public, there's a lot of those things that may not be in our control. And I think a valid concern then is concerning that regarding hold me only accountable for the things that I have jurisdiction or control for. As the national ID program has developed and moved forward, Neil Hammerschmidt, who's actually left the post that he had in Wisconsin with an animal identification group that was actively involved, and I think has moved to a more involved role at a national level, was quoted in a Drover's Journal article a few months ago. John Madej uses this quote, that some food producers may see the National Animal Identification Program as inconvenience or an intrusion. They also should recognize, though, that if they identify their cattle, they can try to make the system work for their own businesses. It's like the motorist realizing, as he quotes here, as long as my SUV came with OnStar or some sort of GPS positioning and it was there for safety and security, why not use it for additional things? Why not use it to get around town? Why not use the animal identification opportunities that we have to further our information as far as product enhancement and genetic improvement and some of those things that I'd like to speak a little bit about right now? One of the programs among many that USDA has in place is called the Certified Beef Program. If you go to that website, you'll see about in the order of 25 or 30 programs, branded kind of programs that Sally mentioned, that specify qualifications that are certified through a very regimented, deliberate process to verify that the certification has been met by USDA. Some are based on breed, some are based on grade or combinations of those two, There are some process verified kinds of things. And I think as we observe in the industry, that branding and that recognition based on information, based on verification, are taking our industry in a very positive direction, in my opinion. Certified Angus beef. Some of us participated last night in a dinner and a panel that was hosted by CAB. In a recent article in the Angus Journal, the history of that is outlined and indicates that as much as $2.3 billion just this year from products that originated with that certification, with that name branding, have been enhanced. U.S. premium beef that uses this has apparently, according to the article, alone paid over $17 million for those in premiums for cattle that have met that certification. Collectively, CAB licensed packers are paying more than $25 million in grid premiums. That's got to be good for our industry. Only one example of several programs that I could indicate, Laura's Lean, Certified Hereford Beef, many of those that you'll see at the back of your proceedings page that I believe have been very positive as we've used that information to differentiate and brand our product. The export world. When the Canadian cow was identified, the world became particularly the export world, those that have imported from Canada and the United States. Japan in particular became very concerned that their food supply and that the risks associated with that disease not be a factor. And obviously in their country they have had BSE questions. Estimated that the ability to verify in an export verification program under USDA's guidance has allowed something on the order of 6 cents per pound value to be captured by the United States beef industry as we've gone forward. So the beef export verification program was rolled out in August. In order to be qualified for that, a supplier has to be eligible, has to meet certain qualifications, and then that designation and label is fixed so that the export world, the world beyond the borders of the United States, have the assurance that comes with that mark of assurity. Other programs that are evolving, Veriprime, company that's beginning, Future Beef, came and went, had some challenges, but had a concept, an idea that I think brought us along in the industry with some of the product differentiation and the value of information. The thoughts then that we can track animal, we can trace, we can reap the benefits from good genetic decisions. Dairy herd improvement has been based, tripled milk production over the past decades simply by using information to make those decisions. Last night in the conference, an old friend, Mike Kasten, who I worked with while in Missouri, indicated the value of using information and what it had done, and I won't take time to go through this data in detail, but basically indicated that by using information to make changes with marbling, that he had been able to move his cattle from the side of select and low choice very markedly into the arena of choice and prime by using the information that had been gathered and established on EPDs to make genetic decisions. We don't know where this is going. It appears to me that the train's on the track, that that the animal identification, verification, and traceback aren't going away. We're going to see those things evolve and change. I would ask you to keep in perspective as we move through this the value of time. Let's look back at 1978 when Microsoft was in the formative stages. How many of you had been would have known enough or would have been secure enough to invest in a group of young engineers with good ideas? Bill Gates, I think that is, that circle there, has become one of the richest men in the world. Now, I don't think any of us are out to be become a Bill Gates, but what I'm trying to point out is that time allows us an important perspective. And so as we evaluate how these things keep and affect us on the ranch, let's keep a few things in mind. I think it's a time that we take the bull by the horns, if you will. I don't know who the photographer was there, but I think we have an opportunity as these things kind of mesh together to really determine as an industry, and I'm good to see the dialogue as it continues, but to seize the day, if you will, to take advantage of opportunities that we may not have again. And it may not look quite right today. It may not look like it does, it will 2 years from now when we have the next range beef cow symposium. We want to make sure that we keep things in balance and we don't get things out of balance as we move through this. And I believe our industry is capable of doing that. Thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to cover these things with you and look forward to the bullpen session tonight. Thank you.